They say the world can be hard, cruel, and ugly. Trust me, it gets worse if your hunger and thirst doesn't push you from position last place to first. Can't build a foundation without having feet in the dirt. So I put in the work, grind harder than most. I don't chase accolades of the living, I'm facing a ghost. That's what makes me the GOAT. Depending on who you ask, my brother, whatever task, got it covered like a mask. Guaranteed they can't see me at the open run, cause I cook competitors until they look well done. Don't act like you don't know where I hail from. I had to climb up out the trenches, sit on benches till my time had come. Don't be mad at the player, be mad at the game. Sneak dissing and hating, that's a flag on the play. Me falling off, huh, that'll be the day. I'm like Bolt in the race, leave the track flambé. It's the open run.
Rough interweb streets. I speak about them every single week on this podcast, but where did they start? Where did they begin? In 1994, the internet, the information superhighway, was introduced to the public at large. Allegedly, it had been around since the 40s, since World War II. An actress, or Al Gore, depending upon who, with whom you speak and whom you believe, invented and created the internet. I don't really care about that part. What I do care about is how I was able to go from potentially being a dinosaur and learn how to transition, how to upgrade my skill set, understand how to utilize this vehicle. And the birth of the internet could be a good or bad thing, depending upon from what lens you view it. Access to practically anything is an amazing, amazing convenience. It can also be a problem. For me, in the early days of utilizing it, outside of sending an email, was when I was at Epic Records and I did the first ever online concert in black music history, February 18th, 1997. Dennis Coles, Corey Woods, Daryl Hill, aka Ghostface Killah, Raekwon, and Capadonna of the mighty infamous Wu-Tang Clan. I had no idea what the hell I was doing, but I did it. The money was good. Life was good. The 90s were a trip for money. They were just throwing it out the window. I wanted to get my piece. And it came faster than ever as a result of this information superhighway. I could reach people I could never reach with just a concert in New York City, a concert in Toronto, a concert in LA. I could reach people in Copenhagen, Denmark, or Tokyo, Japan, or Accra, Ghana, or Sao Paulo, Brazil, Melbourne, Australia, just by clicking a button on a computer. Word to dial up. So we take for granted what we can do online right now because you can damn near do anything. But imagine at its infancy, the things we could imagine and the things we were limited by. I was able to meet Kanye West as a result of the internet. But this is back in the 90s. This is a different Kanye. But still the same Kanye. I'm hoping to get Cootie Simmons on the show soon so we can tell that story. I don't want to tell too much of it now. But part of the Kanye story has to do with a group out of England by the name of Jamiroquai, their lead singer Jason Key, and a project that I had. Even though I was supposed to be just the rap guy at Epic Records, I was a fan of all music. I used to go to Yo-Yo Ma classical music meetings because if you can sell classical, you can sell anything. I want to know everything. And once you're in the building, message, you're in the building. So I made my way and ingratiated myself on every floor in that Sony building from legal on up. And they wanted to break Jamiroquai in the United States. We just shot a video called Virtual Insanity from the Traveling Without Moving album. It's a very unique video. It showcases Jason's unique style of dance and his big floppy hats and all this other stuff. You know, people are trying to deem him the next Stevie Wonder. I was like, pump the brakes. But he had a style to him, no doubt. He definitely co-opted a lot of, or should I say he paid homage to, I guess that's the popular way of saying he didn't bite. The work of Johnny Hammond, if you're not familiar, a lot of your favorite rap songs have utilized Mr. Hammond's grooves. Jamiroquai was no different. Virtual Insanity indeed. Because of what we did online with Virtual Insanity, what we did online with Jason's album, what we did online with Ghostface's album, way back in 1996, the internet was 2 years old. We had no idea. We take it for granted today. At least I didn't know. And yet here we are. And here is where you are as well. So I'd like to welcome you to the Open Run with Will Strickland. That would be me. The Open Run with Will Strickland is brought to you by the fine folks at Press. We are press.net. I can be found across these rough interweb streets at W_Strickland and the number one on Twitter, Will Strickland and the number one on IG, and across all streaming platforms where podcasts can be found. Everything online was possible. COVID made it even more applicable, the idea that everything could be found and done online, which could be the cause, the demise of the working class and everything else as robotics and technology, because you can't stop time and technology, They're starting to take over everything. Can't go into a grocery store without having a self-checkout aisle or the airport. Less and less workers, with more computers, you do the work. We save costs and tack it on to your groceries the American way. But you can teach online, online dating, all this other stuff. All this stuff is possible now. You don't have the time because you have to work all day to go grocery shopping and end up working at the grocery store to bag your own groceries now. Also social media. And social media is not so much media anymore as it is people who have access to these things. I'll talk about with my guests later on. And the barriers to that access no longer exist with the ability to dial up or go online and start typing and talking. The game has changed. And the idea of fantasy sports is really a big deal. Most guys who play fantasy sports are failed athletes who could not make it a high level or just enjoy the game. Like, let me not shit on everybody. But for the most part, it's like guys who wish they could do the stuff they see these athletes do, but they can't. So what's the best way to do it? Control the narrative. Whether you're playing 2K or you're playing fantasy basketball on one of these services, you can control the action. People lose their minds. It's basically gambling in a Sims game. Man, Kyrie better have 40 tonight, man, with 2 assists. If he turns the ball over 15 times, it's going to be mad. Going to mess up my fantasy score. Okay. These guys are in the fantasy world. It's like they're asking themselves or asking other people if you ever felt like you were performing in a movie that no one else is watching. Because that's what they do. Unless they want to interject themselves in the games by dealing with the players when they get ejected or jumping on the court and saving animals, gluing themselves to the stanchions or handcuffing themselves to the stanchions. Minnesota, your security kind of lacks. Whole nother conversation. We'll talk about that later. But a movie that everyone is watching is the Boston Celtics versus the Brooklyn Nets. The fact that the Boston Celtics, who basically changed the course of their season by buying into what first-year head coach Ime Udoka was selling, when a great majority of people suppose, because at the first sign of adversity, you should break it up, run away, not fight it, that you should break up Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. They can't play together. Marcus Smart was too much of a problem in the locker room. But if Marcus Smart doesn't call them out and give Ime Udoka the cosign to do what he does, when the calendar year turned to 2022, they don't do what they did without that, without total buy-in. The fact that they're going to be a side story to everything that I'm about to talk about is sad. And that's my fault. And that's the fault of media. And that's the fault of the Brooklyn Nets. Let's be honest. They're a high visibility team, high visibility stories, high visibility flakes. Two in particular, Benjamin David Simmons and Kyrie Andrew Irving. But let's talk about the metaphysical art installation in Brooklyn. That is the Nets. They're down 3-0 in this series, coming in as the 8th seed or a 7th seed, and a great many people picked them to win the NBA championship this year. Look at all the talent they had. They start off the year in one thing. And again, never know how the NBA season is going to go. This has been one of those seasons. But on their roster, because you don't win championships on paper, but their roster at the beginning of the season looked like world beaters. You had Kevin Wayne Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Edward Harden Jr., would force his way out of Houston so he could play in Brooklyn and go to New York Fashion Week if he wanted to with the baby. I don't know. At any rate, that's not how the season ended. James Harden forced his way out of Brooklyn. 2 forced trades in less than a 24-month span. Soon will be, like I said, on the podcast where we were talking about Brooklyn Nets and previewing the playoffs. No country for old men. James Harden is clearly not the same James Harden that won the MVP in 2018 or the James Harden that was giving you 36 and the only 60-point triple-double in NBA history. At least recorded history. They said, well, did it, but I can't get into that part. But he forces his way out of Brooklyn, and they make a trade. With end of the division, this rarely, if ever, happens in the annals of the NBA. Generally, you trade a guy to another conference. They traded right up and right down, as it would be, the I-95 Turnpike, when they moved James Harden from Brooklyn to Philadelphia for Ben Simmons. Some might say that's rearranging deck chairs in the Titanic for both teams. We'll find out about Philadelphia a little bit later with our guests as well. But right now, let's talk about Brooklyn. There's a guy who's like, oh, yeah, you know, man, I think I'm going to come back. And you haven't played all year. My back is hurting. And I said, how did your back hurt? Well, Charles Barkley had some words about how Ben Simmons hurt his back. He said, by sitting on his ass for a year and a half. Ouch. And even Screaming A, who I'm going to give some stats to, knew very well what was going to happen. When they were down 0-2 and there were grumblings that somehow Ben Simmons was going to come back and play in Game 3. Steve Nash, the coach, who clearly has no control, no institutional control in Brooklyn, says that. That's the first I've heard of it. What? But if Ben Simmons wasn't going to play in game three, why would he play in game four? Now that they're down 3-0. Screaming A said, I'll wait. I was on that same boat. I didn't believe he was coming back anyway. Like, what was he going to do? I think a lot of people do play fantasy basketball when they look at these situations and think, oh, he's been out a year, but he can come back and automatically, with all the trauma he suffered from, oh, Joel Embiid was talking about me, and just because I didn't dunk on Trae Young, like, come on, my guy. It's a mental health issue. I'm not going there. I'm not trying to tread on that or disrespect that. There is trauma, clearly. This guy doesn't want to play basketball, but he wants to get paid for playing basketball. I'm going to file a $20 million grievance for coming to practice. I showed up every day. That means I should get paid. I showed up to work. I just didn't do any of the work that I was paid to do. It's a shit show in Brooklyn. But let's talk about the guys who are actually playing. The KD Kyrie Nets are on the verge of elimination against the Boston Celtics. The Celtics will not allow them to breathe. They're going to choke them out immediately. There's going to be a fight. Don't get me wrong. KD and Kyrie will fight to help their team win. Steve Nash doesn't really know what he's doing right now. I can see that. Hall of Famer, two-time MVP. I don't think he's a great coach. You know, that's the team that allegedly didn't need a coach, according to Kyrie Irving, a.k.a. World B. Flat. And clearly they don't, because this is the result of not having a coach. Seventh seed in the East, where you were touted by many in every sports book in Vegas as the eventual NBA champion for this season. You got Mary J. Blige on the sideline cheering you on, looking like Monet from Power, cheering on Zeke Cross, although we never saw Zeke actually play a game. You know why? Because this game is basura. I can tell that by the way he shot on the show. You have to watch the show to see what I'm talking about. Plus, he was cross-eyed. He couldn't see. Then, of course, according to my man Ed, you have Shelton Jackson Lee, a.k.a. the Gentrifier, originally from Brooklyn, but migrated to Madison Square Garden to cheer on the Knicks. There was no Brooklyn Nets when he was growing up, but he shows up to the Brooklyn Nets game because there's no Knicks in the playoffs this year. Everybody's mad at Spike because he moved to Hollywood. He moved to New York. He doesn't care about Brooklyn anymore. Okay. And whether Ramadan Kyrie is paying $50,000 for his fingers he left up in Boston, or the fact that they're down 3-0. And Kevin Durant, who's had a historically terrible series, shooting 36% from the field, post-game gelling excuses. The excuse game is way heavy in Brooklyn right now. Kyrie Irving, like, oh yeah, well, they had since December to gel. We're a new team. No, Boston got seven new guys in their squad. You made a decision. Now you want to have excuses? Nah, we can't have that, my guy. You chose this path. Hey, look, you made the Nets acquiesce to your whims. They let you back on the team because they knew they had invested so much in this thing, working out the experiment that you guys concocted. Hey, I'm going to leave Boston. Kevin, you should leave Golden State. Have your own thing. We can build our own thing here. But here's the thing about these guys. Great players. Kevin Durant is easily a top 15 all-time player. 100%. There's no debating this. Kyrie Irving didn't make. He's top 75 to 75, if I'm not mistaken. He's an NBA champion. To some, the most skilled player to ever play the game. But he didn't make the top 75. Never really made a bunch of all-NBA teams. Dame Lillard has a better resume on that end of it than he does. From an individual player standpoint, he's on the top 75 to 75 list. Here's the issue. Wardell Stephen Curry II is a leader. The hashtag, he who shan't be named, is a leader. They are Batman. They understand when to defer and when to step up. They understand the burden of leadership means that sometimes you're going to fall and you have to get up. You're going to be the one that takes the darts. And looked early on in the career of Kevin Wayne Durant that he would be one of those guys as well. But he was sick and tired of being sick and tired. He was tired of being second place to he who shan't be named. Big Sports Illustrated article about it years and years ago. So he and Kyrie conspired to leave Golden State after he got his championships there and finals MVPs. Ran to a 73-win team that lost to that same 32-year-old, soon-to-be 33-year-old, he who shan't be named. Won two championships. Amazing. We're going to be Batman and Robin, and who's going to be the butler, Alfred? Is it going to be James Harden, won an MVP in this league, or you, Kyrie? Well, nobody knew their roles, plus they didn't need a coach. Until you found out that two of the greatest offensive weapons to ever play the game, great assassins, maybe not great leaders, but this movie doesn't say Robin and Robin, it says Batman and Robin. And no leadership, and they can't produce, create, or innovate on a higher level, in the words of Lawrence Krishna Parker, born in Brooklyn. So we'll be back, but for now, just second.
I don't care who's first or who last, but I know that y'all just better rock this at the drop of a dime, baby.
This is a Joe Rock exclusive.
back giving you more of what you asked for. It's the Open Run with Will Strickland in conversation with the CEO, COOO, of allhiphop.com, the man Chuck Crickmore. Hey, look, we never met each other before.
That's crazy.
We got on, and I want to welcome you to the show first and foremost, but I didn't realize that we'd never met with all you've done in the culture and you know, the things I've done as well, but I'm glad to have you here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's crazy. You know, sometimes it works like that, but that means you just have more to go and see.
We do. And what I want to do is, as I do with every guest that comes on the podcast, is have you run your resume, but I want to do it differently today.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do like a kind of a word. So we just do this game called the association, which is basically a word association game. So I'm throwing some words out there to you, and I want you to give me your first thoughts on those words, and we'll go from there. It'll speak to you running your resume, sir. So with that being said, Newark.
Yeah, born and raised. Well, not born, but raised mostly. Yeah, Newark, Delaware. Also Newark, New Jersey, which was home for a while too. But Newark, Delaware is where, you know, I found myself and where my parents moved when I was very young in order for us to have a better life. It was the ashes of the civil rights, so there was a lot of upward mobility for Black people. We were seeing our heroes knocked down, and I think the culture, or we should say just Black people in general, were really trying to make things happen. So Newark was good to me in a lot of ways because, you know, I found out who I was there in terms of being a Black man, and the backdrop of that a lot of times was just being around a lot of white people.
Mm.
And a lot of Black people that I know were never called certain words, but we were, and we had to defend that. And my father kind of had to defend our land, and my mom, you know, we had to grow up in that. So Newark's a special place. It's a unique place. And I don't think I would have it any other way. Even though growing up, I really wanted to be from New York, you know, Newark helped me. It created a different type of drive in me. And Delaware in general created a different type of drive in me that allowed me to be prosperous when I did move to New York.
You know, it's crazy because when people see the name, they automatically think Newark, New Jersey, but it's pronounced differently. Mm-hmm. And I think it's great what you said about the ashes of the civil rights movement, because from those ashes, if you think about it, they're very similar or akin to the rubble and ashes of the South Bronx that helped create the culture by which we earn a living.
Right? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think that's very important to note. And when you're looking at that living, I want to do another word or phrase for the association. Greedy Greg.
Grouchy.
Oh, did I say greedy?
Yeah, you said greedy.
I said greedy. Grouchy Greg. Why did I say greedy? Anyway, Grouchy Greg.
Grouchy Greg, genius, my business partner, you know what I'm saying? Certified genius. And he and I have been working together for some 25 years. All Hip Hop, our partnership in All Hip Hop is a little under that, but we actually worked together before that. And before that, we were two young, scrappy hip hop heads in Delaware, really figuring it out. We all used to rap. We all used to produce. We all used to DJ. And Greg, you know, Greg was the man, is the man. But in Delaware at that time, he was the man, especially in Newark. Most hip hop heads came out of Wilmington, and that, you know, we loved that. We loved everybody, right? But I think a lot of times Newark got overlooked for its contributions to hip hop and the ingenuity that I think we brought to the game. So Greg is a part of that. I'm a part of that as well. But I think that I was a little removed because I was doing a lot on a college campus. And Greg was doing it literally in the street, so to speak, doing parties, events, pressing up vinyl, dropping albums with his crew. And I was more in a college setting, so to speak, opening concerts and putting on concerts, you know. And so we were approaching things from a different angle. So when I ended up graduating and he went to school for the audio side, the recording side and things like that, the business, music business side, when we came together after the fact, we ended up having an amazing partnership that really we had no idea what was about to happen when we started. But when we got going, we realized that we were an unstoppable force.
Well, you noted something that was one of the phrases that I was going to use in the last association phrase for this introduction, 25th anniversary.
Yeah, 25, that, man. Big 25, man.
That's mm-hmm. a big number. A quarter of a
century. You see how my lips just went together, 25, you know?
Right. No, but here's the thing, though. Think about this. And I'm going to say this. People may disagree with me or not, but oftentimes it feels like, especially in this sport, especially as Black men and Black people, to have the focus and drive and determination to stick together with someone and see the vision through for 25 years is an accomplishment. It's like a marriage. You're going to have drag out, bang out fights, disagreements, but at the end of the day, you see the vision and you're able to overcome those things. Tell me a little bit about the 25th anniversary, what you have planned coming up for allhiphop.com.
Yeah, the 25th is going to be amazing, man. We have done something that no other media outlet has done. Media outlets have existed for over 25 years at this point, but having the same ownership, the same partnership, you know, it's never been done. And I would go so far as to say, I don't think we've seen a Black-owned company in hip-hop go this long with the same partnership. You know what I'm saying? I don't know it. You know what I'm saying? So it's, you know, it's an accomplishment. What we have planned is it's going to be incredible, man. And I don't want to spill the beans on everything, but we have a lot of people that have a lot of interest in doing everything. And I can't say too much because I don't want to give up what's to come, but you know, it's going to be what I would consider an experience. You know, all your senses are going to be
stimulated, no doubt.
Yeah, definitely.
So everything. With this, and that's a beautiful thing, man. And congratulations once again. I think it's really important to make note of that. And I think when you look at 25 years of allhiphop.com and think about the advent of the internet, I mean, you guys, if you started in 98, the internet was 4 years old. We take the internet for granted right now. For mass public consumption, the internet came to play in 1994. Mm-hmm. So think about how far ahead of the curve you guys were in 1998, looking at the landscape and saying, we can do something with this. We don't know where it's going to go, but we have a general idea. And then how you made that flourish in less than 10 years to the degree that it was the most viewed hip hop site in the world.
Yeah, we had, you know, and when you think about the music industry, we were pretty much 10 years flat ahead of the game. And they started out calling us new media, and that was cool for a while. But at a certain point, it got to a point where, hold up, it's not really that new. You know what I mean? And so it was a blessing, man. You know, Greg and myself, we both were unknowingly, I think, in a lot of ways, visionaries. And we were so young, but, you know, being able to also let go of what we learned or let go of what was standard and throw that away. It really reminded me of the South Bronx, man, because there was nothing there. It was desolate and the money was going to magazines still. And we were getting starved out of money. You know, we started from nothing really, you know, and we used all of our guerrilla sensibilities to make it happen. So I went back to my old school, stole every program to fit.
Right.
You know, I didn't steal the computers, but you know, that was, you know, let me stop. But I stole every program. I bought my own computers, by the way.
I think it's statute of limitation at this point, unless it's murder. It's statute of limitation. So you're good.
Yeah, definitely. And Greg, you know, Greg paid his first, you know, his first, I don't know, whatever, he paid it with an unemployment check, you know, his first.
Right.
Like our first server fees or whatever, I don't know, you know, so we made it happen, man. So You know, right now, you know, I take it back. I was going to say there's not really too much guerrilla going on in guerrilla mentality in hip hop now, but it's not really used the right way. You know, it's used for chaos and mayhem now, not really for the benefit of the culture, in my opinion.
Oh, no, we're going to get into that for sure. And I think what you said was so key into how you guys are doing anything. And it's part of your DNA, too, if you think about it. We, as a people, have generally been able, especially in North America, been able to turn nothing into something. This isn't our DNA. It's what we do. Mm-hmm. And to look at the things you did to get what you wanted, I always say, to get something you never had, you got to do something you never did. Mm-hmm. So you're a college student trying to get your degree, but you're in there on some larceny. You got larceny's feelings in your heart.
Oh, yeah. You see what I'm saying? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Look, man, it's still.
It was a necessity.
Exactly. Look, I've been trying to write a book for years, and I can't get past the fact that I don't want to say everything that we were doing while we were in college trying to get by. And I'm just like, you know, one time, I'll tell you a funny story. One time we were at Thanksgiving, whole family around the, you know, just chilling or whatever. And we start. We play this game where we're going to, each one of us is going to tell something about somebody else in the family that they don't know or something, I forget. And yo, my brother goes in and he starts dumping all this stuff that I did in college in front of my mom. And I'm like, bro, what are you doing right now? Like, what are you
Snicks
doing?
Snicks jacket on.
Your friend, I'm like, really? Okay, that's what we doing? But the point is when you go back and you think about it, you like, we really did the most because we ain't really have the money. We ain't have nothing really, you know? Mm. So luckily for me, we had a budget at UD though, that we were able to use to get people like The Roots, KRS-One, you know, Lords of the Underground, and a bunch of other people, you know, down there. Even Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael, met him. Mm-hmm. Rest in peace. So we had a beautiful experience and we had a great relationship with the whole community as well. So, you know, we weren't just nerds. We were probably nerds, but not like nerds. You know, we were out there.
Troy Donald Jamerson, a.k.a. Pharoah Monch, once said, it's a gentleman thug. That's, you can be that nerd and still be that dude because you did what was necessary, at least. Yeah. In that moment, you felt that way. When you spoke earlier about the difference in that fine line between art and commerce in this culture, and how it's changed, and we don't want to be the get off my lawn dudes, but there's a difference in how it's approached today. Mm-hmm. When you think about the fine line between those things and how the culture has been, or at least rap has been utilized, not necessarily as a vehicle to push the culture forward, but mainly for a lot of people, just to make money. It's hard to knock those guys because there's an industry around that.
Yeah.
Is there something that's to be said for people who don't respect the culture and only want to gain financially from an entity called rap that doesn't really, you know, you might do things that injure not only yourself, but the people around you?
Yeah, you know, I try not to be too hard on the current generation or even people that are our age or whatever that are doing it. I think it's always been an element of money involved, you know.
Always.
Yeah, always. And it's always been predicated on being something that we utilize to change our conditions or our lives. So once commerce gets involved or once corporations get involved or once even someone shows a pathway to getting money, then the masses are going to follow suit. But I do think that when we were, you know, really young as a culture, we knew that there were rules that you had to live by. And if you violated those rules, there were consequences. There were financial consequences, too. So if you were corny or you were perceived as pop rap, then maybe you weren't able to do a show in New York, or maybe you weren't able to be relevant culturally. And so now here we are, almost 50 years later as a culture, and it's pretty much back to the Wild West. But here's the problem, I think, and this is no knock against the masses or white people or voyeurs or whatever, but the drivers of the financial side of things it's just not black anymore. It's skewed very heavily outside of the black community, but the music is not reflective, I think, of the richness of our culture. It's really kind of rooted in this voyeurism and this trauma porn type of hip hop that people just eat up, and it's sometimes it's at our detriment.
I love that you noted the trauma porn part of it and the voyeuristic aspect of the culture. It's always been there. I mean, when you look at the numbers, almost 80% of the rap music that's consumed is by white teenage males.
Mm-hmm.
Suburban white teenage males,
mm-hmm.
who, when yeah. they're in their neighborhoods, they're Timothy and Brad. When they come down to the hood, it's T Wizard and B Rad. So I get it. I get it. You can code switch, you wear certain attributes, but we walk around with the African American Express. We can't leave one home without it.
Yeah, definitely, right. Definitely.
So, in that sense, I totally understand that from a driver's standpoint, and that the thing has become homogenized in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. If you don't sound this way and you don't look this way, you're not getting any airplay, you're not getting any push. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the danger. You talk about the richness being eliminated because of that homogenization. So while we prop up one or two people, like mm-hmm. when they say, why are you guys complaining? You guys have a billionaire. Look at Oprah. Look at Diddy. Look at Rihanna. You have enough. You know how many billionaires we don't talk about on a daily basis that we'll never know their names that live in America? You're telling me about three people.
But right.
Again, I don't want to change this last too much.
Forbes just dropped a list of all the billionaires in the world, and they had to kind of carve out a little space for entertainment. And then you start seeing the Oprahs and the Jay-Z's and the Kanye West. And, you know, all those numbers are, you know, relative, I think, too. But the bulk of the list is like, you know, oil barons and, you know, your Bill Gates and
people,
all.
And it's a trip. Yeah, for sure. And I think what's important in that to note is that you said the drivers of the culture don't necessarily represent the culture. And there was a stigma around the Big U's or the Jay Princes and those people who are financing the Harry O's, the people like that, you know, the Bimmies, the Deb Antonys and those people who are financing a lot of what was happening and making sure that these things were happening and washing their money. But that is the American way, is it not? It's just when the face of that American way.
I don't have any problem with those people. In fact, I think those people are extremely important to the culture and extremely important to the code that we sort of live by, for better or worse. You know, I think the culture always has to police itself. I think more importantly now, what we're seeing is technology driving hip hop culture. You see algorithms, and you see things that are very much unseen driving the culture. So on YouTube, if you get on there with 10 guys in a room and y'all don't have no shirt on and you got guns and y'all rap about killing other black people, the algorithm is going to direct people to that video. Instagram too. If you're on Instagram and you do a certain type of activity, and it may not be that, but it may be something else, you know, you slapping somebody's hat off, that's going to drive the algorithm. And if you're on Spotify, it's driven a certain way too. Now, granted, that might be based on your age or that might be based on youth culture, but the artist that is doing that positive type of, or I don't even want to say positive
person, right.
But there's just a regular rapper. You're not getting that type of love. And if you do sort of get that type of love, say like a Kendrick or a Cole or someone like that, I mean, you have to be, your skill set has to be like through the roof.
But don't we want that though? I know there's balance in having like the people who are trying to do it, but why are we paying attention to those who are trying to nurture their skills? There's no minor leagues for rapping. Either you're great or you're trying to be great, right?
Yeah, at the end of the day. If you're beefing though, you don't have to be great. If you're dissing somebody, you don't have to be great. So there's a lot of great rappers. I mean, there's a lot of great rappers right now, right here, who just don't get the traction because that's about it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you noted J. Cole, you noted you know, Kendrick Lamar, Duckworth, and you talk about those guys. And there's a video I was watching just not long ago about country music and country music's relationship to rap music and hip hop culture. And there was a line about J. Cole saying, yeah, I did the work. I put in all this work and I'm going to be at the award show to watch Iggy get the award while I'm trying to grin through my teeth. And that happens all the time. There's certain, I mean, this has been the history of popular music in North America forever and time immemorial since they established Columbia Records.
Mm-hmm.
And they segregated all of the music. There was three genres back then, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Hillbilly,
mm-hmm.
race music, and mainstream.
Mm.
But now that we control Hillbilly, shouts out to Lil Nas X, who flipped what the Billboard did. We definitely control race music.
Mm-hmm.
Which they had to change to rock and roll because they couldn't have Elvis on the face of race music, could they?
No, definitely not.
So, and then mainstream. So despite what the artist formerly known as Jonathan William Davis, a.k.a. Q-Tip, once said in a song, did you talk about popular rap? Hammer, rap is not pop. If you're calling that, please stop. It's now the popular music, the most popular music on the planet.
Yep. That's crazy.
What, I mean, when you think about it, it's hard to say we don't want this to flourish. But at the same time, are there things that we would see or like to see differently? Absolutely. And I think that's where you can be a driver and a leader in that sense. So as you elevate from 25 years of doing allhiphop.com, what are some of the things you want to do to impart to the community that we could do better with this culture and drive it forward into the next 25 years?
Well, that's a good question. And that's a tough question to answer. But I will say, by the way, shout out to Jimmy Allen and all the black country singers. They really bum rushing the culture over there too, which really is black culture, but you know, that's a whole nother story. He's from Delaware as well. But
no, do your thing.
Yeah, you know we gotta shout out the home team. But as far as moving forward with things, it's tough, man, because like I said, we're motivated now by algorithms, clicks, views, likes, and what we've traditionally done as a company and as a culture, as media, we've always upheld those core values. So I think the future now is becoming more of a hybrid of entertainment, more of a hybrid of immersion into the new culture as it is right now, and finding those unique voices that are reminiscent of what we did, but also, you know, inclusive of what's going on now. Because right now, if you were to ask somebody who's the face of journalism or media, they're not really journalists or media per se. They're media by virtue of the fact that they interview people or they may sit in front of someone. But they're not media in terms of what I would consider someone who either challenges or reports or, you know, is able to sort of dictate culture in a way that's, you know, intelligent, honestly. It's more rooted in entertainment. And again, this is really not a knock at anybody. It just tells you how expansive the culture is right now. And also it says, oh, what the hell can I do once this part of my career is over? And that's a whole nother story. You know, I told, I was hollering at the Locks a couple years ago, and I said to them, I said, wow, y'all, I was like, yo, I'm about to start rhyming because y'all coming in on our culture so heavy. Because
right.
At the time they had a podcast they had started, and I said, I'm about to start rhyming. And they's like, yo, we got a verse for you, each one of us 16, if you do. I said, oh, well, now I'm off to a great start if we decide to go that route. So, you know. I mean, you know, it's all relative.
Samuel L. Jackson said the same thing to Busta Rhymes. I was on the set of Shaft 2000 and with the late, great John Singleton, blessed dead, doing an interview actually for Rat Pacing Magazine. I was a music editor there years and years ago.
Yeah.
And I remember when Busta, I was interviewing Busta as well, and Busta was like, yo, Sam didn't like rappers in these movies. Now he's cool with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you can't stop time and technology. And the force that is hip hop culture, as we just explained, has taken over everything.
Yeah,
you roll with it, you get rolled on. Mm-hmm, and I think that with what Busta said is that he said, Grandpa Monster from the, remember that show in the 60s, The Monsters with Herman Monster and all that? He said, mm-hmm. Al Lewis, who's from Queens, came to the set and he's like, Buster, with it. He's like old as hell. He couldn't even walk. Buster, you go get it. I'm like, who is this? He's listening to my music?
Wow.
That's how pervasive this thing is. And
yeah.
You talk about treading on other things. And it's funny, these, I guess, oxymoronically named smartphones give people an opportunity to express themselves and say they are media. They, mm-hmm. The barriers to entry have been eliminated. So you might have gone to school for journalism and some kid with a smartphone can come and say, I said, my company, that has no real company, it's just a name, bust your head through White Meat Records. Or, you know, and say, I'm media, or I'm a record label, or I'm a this, or I'm that. And then it's real because it's in this simulation. So when you think about what the culture's done for you, are you living your dream or is this a simulation?
No. This is my dream. Like my dream, like I say it all the time, but my dreams as a young person have all come true, every single one of them. I would say that, you know, professional dreams. Obviously, I was telling somebody the other day, yeah, you know, if my real dream came true, I'd be like a super rich rapper with a Lamborghini pulling up out of my mansion, you know.
Right.
But I got close enough, you know what I'm saying? So I always, you know, we're all getting to this age where, you know, our mortality starts to set in and we start to think about our legacies and stuff. And I say, you know, if I was to go right now, I wouldn't have a problem. You know, mm-hmm. I really haven't left a whole lot on the table. Now I still have some art ambitions and yeah, we work on that. But yeah, man, the dreams come true, bro. I mean, I can call DMC like right now. I can talk to Chuck D right now. Like I can walk almost into any room in this industry right now. You know what I mean? And you know, I mean, geez, I've interviewed everyone I ever wanted to interview in the world, just about. I mean, there are a couple like outside of hip hop that I want to get at, like Stevie Wonder, which I did do, by the way. I interviewed Stevie Wonder, but somebody hated on me, and I'm not going to say much more than that. and that footage got deleted, and so. Mm. That's a whole nother story. However, it's not a lot that we haven't done professionally, you know. By the way, there's not a lot of people that have done what we've done professionally. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So when I see a lot of these cats, they out here calling themselves the GOAT of hip hop or they this or that, I say, are you the GOAT? Because I mean, far as I could see, a lot of people work for other people, a lot of people leverage their relationships and were able to make a career out of bouncing around.
They did it.
Yeah. I say, hey, man, ain't nobody do it like we did it. You know what I'm saying? Now, granted, the source, like, think, and this is not a knock, but, man, when you look at the run that a lot of these publications and media outlets had, we all had about the same run. You know what I'm saying? Like, when you really look at the hardcore numbers, I mean, the sources run, and I'm not disrespecting the source. That culturally, there's nothing comparable, really. But that was about maybe 15 years.
Mm. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if you really, really look at it, you could do, from a media standpoint, especially in rap music and hip hop culture, the same way we look at the golden era, the era before that, the pioneers, if the source of the pioneers, you came up in the golden era. You came up in the post Biggie Tupac era with DMX and or 50 Cent and those guys. Eminem, Jay-Z, that era.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we did a top 15 years in rap music and hip hop culture. I think I did it with Daddy-O from Stetson Sonic. It was funny because we did have this conversation about this. We're really looking at it. He's going to be partial to his own era. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, as you said, you pay proper deference to the source, but you should not ever say, like, it's like being a boxer.
Yeah.
Why am I going to tell you I'm not the best? I feel like I'm the best.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That's real talk.
If you knew you were rocking with the best, there's no need to go to the rest as we continue our conversation with the CEO of AllHipHop.com, Chuck Kreekmer, right here on The Open Run with Will Strickland. Back in a minute.
Man.
You're now listening to the sounds of the Open Run with Will Strickland, where the lecture is conducted from the mic into the speaker in conversation with the CEO of AllHipHop.com, Chuck Kreekmer. Chuck, my man, you've been dropping bars all day, and I want to pay homage to Delaware. Would you say that you and Grouchy Greg are the greatest exports from the state of Delaware?
Nah. I can't.
Don't say Joe Biden or the DuPonts.
Nah. There's a lot of exports. I mean, we're one of them, though. Yeah, I'll say that.
Okay. Well, you know, in basketball, there are some guys, some ladies as well, who would consider the best to ever come out of that state. Elena Deladon, who plays the Washington Mystics, is clearly one of the tops, male or female. But I like to refer to the guy they call the Michael Jordan of Delaware, the big ragu, Dante DiVincenzo, who plays for the Sacramento Kings. I just love when they say that. It cracks me up. He's the Mike. What is it to be the Michael Jordan of Delaware?
I don't know.
Is that a good or bad thing? I always wonder what that was. And then, a guy who I find is really refreshing, young cat who lost his grandparents in a fire in Wilmington a couple years ago. Is now in the NBA, played for one of our former teammates from Rice, is now the assistant coach at VCU, coach a young man by the name of Bones Highland, who is playing for the Denver Nuggets right now from Wilmington. So he's probably the most familiar to people out there. But I would say that is, unless I'm leaving somebody out, those are probably the top three ball players from Delaware.
You're missing a key person, bro.
Tell me who I'm missing.
Aaron Stansberry.
Are you serious? The Statue of Liberty 360 dunk? Terrence Stansberry is from Delaware?
Yes, sir. Come on.
All right. Would it be disrespectful to say that a lot of Delaware cats claim they're from Philly?
I would say that's a lot of – I know some that do. I put it like that. I don't know a lot, but I do know some key people in entertainment and music that will, you know, default to Philly for, I guess, maybe to be, you know, more relatable or something.
When you talk about like wanting to have that quote unquote big city feel and feel like you're from New York or Philly, might be a part of it. The playoffs are going on right now. You know, what teams would Delaware like represent? Do they rep Philly? I guess they would rep the Sixers, no?
I have always, you know, I'm not super huge into basketball anymore, but yeah, I'm repping Phillies, Sixers, and Eagles all day.
Oh, okay. Well, I respect that. So right now, the Philadelphia 76ers are in a battle necessarily with the Toronto Raptors. Toronto Raptors have the championship DNA, but they have a bunch of guys injured. The guy who a lot of people feel should have been the MVP or should be the MVP this year, Joel Embiid, is dealing with a thumb injury, but they're up 3-1 in this series.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, the best of seven series, they should close it out in Philly tonight, no?
I hope so. I've been actually tapping into this series, man. And, I've been enjoying it a little bit, man, you know, because I haven't tapped in so long. But here's the thing. For me, I'm trying to figure out ways of relaxing and not working. And basketball is not a sport I can watch and work to. You have to be watching. You know what I'm saying? So boxing's my favorite sport. Now, you can't really – you can watch football for sure and work. Boxing is sort of but basketball you have to watch. So
all the action.
Yeah. So I'll be tuned in. The funny thing for me though is the dunks, it's like a 3-point thing now. Like that's all they do now. And it does amaze me when they pull up past
half the 3-point.
Yeah. And I'll be like, "Yo, are they going to change the court size and length and all that, or what? What's going to happen in the future? Because they're killing it."
Well, I know that, you know, when you look at this series and you look at the changes in basketball, like you talked about the same changes in hip-hop culture and how the business of the culture has changed from what the culture is. One thing has not changed is Glenn Rivers. I cannot, with due respect to the most elegant cat to ever play basketball, Julius Winfield Irving II, ever called Glenn Rivers Doc, especially in Philly. Okay? But there's a troubling past we have to deal with. In the words of the immortal rap battleist T-Rex, some grown man bars we will have to deal with right now.
Right.
And Glenn Rivers has choked off a number of 3-1 leads in the playoffs in his history, the most in NBA history. The Philadelphia 76ers are currently with a 3-1 lead on the Toronto Raptors. Is it cause for concern?
Nah, we got this. We got this.
You're sure?
The curse is over.
So it ends tonight.
It's tonight.
I can respect that. I can respect that, man. I mean, you know, a lot of people are saying that the Raptors have a chance. I don't think they have a chance without Van Vliet. And Embiid is just too dominant, man. And if you think about a guy like James Harden, who was counted on to take them further than the second round, they will have an opportunity to close out the Raptors tonight. Will it be predicated on a guy who is planning on opting out of $47 million? If you had $47 million guaranteed on the table, would you ever opt out of that, knowing you haven't played well in the past 2 years and you expect to get a lifetime achievement contract of $200 million over the next 3-4 years?
Nah.
No.
No way.
No. Well, you know, neither one of these guys have had great playoff success. The last time the Sixers were in the finals was during the time of Allen Ezell Iverson. He was there in 2001. Yeah. But your squad is easily the last championship team, no? Would it be safe to say that's your squad?
Oh, yeah. You know, I was living my life so heavy in the AI era. I'm talking about
before that. I'm talking about the championship squad with Doc and Moses.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's when I loved the game so much, man, because the rivalries were so amazing back then. You had to hate the Celtics. You had to respect the Lakers. And, you know, you love to see them get it on. Like when Doc clocked Bird, oh, my God. Bird's whole hair frizzed out. I mean, you hated to see the fight. Because I thought of Doc as such a classy dude, but when it happened, I was happy about it. You know what I mean? So, so that's my era, man. They even had a rap song in Philly about the Sixers when they won one of those years. I forget the exact year.
It was 82, 83. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they had because they brought in Moses Malone, and they were, you know, they were happy about that. That changed the dynamic. So, yeah, that's when I loved it, man. And also, you know, it seemed to me in a way to resemble hip hop a little bit because money had not, like, I know the guys deserved money. You know, they deserved more money probably. But I will say that it felt like money had not completely, like, affected the game. Like, the loyalty to the team was there. There weren't people trading. Like, imagine Bird playing for the Lakers or Doc playing for like Celtics or something. You know,
Chuck,
what I'm
about to give you the business. I'm about to give you the business right now. Literally the business. Okay.
The business.
You just said loyalty to the sports team. Loyalty to a team that if you broke your leg tomorrow, they would trade you. Then where's the loyalty
now? True.
So I'm gonna keep it up with you. This is a fan construct, this idea of loyalty in sports business. It's a fan construct. If somebody told you when you built allhiphop.com that you could never go out and seek outside finances to help you move forward or partnership to move forward or go to another team. Like you could work with Grouchy Greg, but you can't work with these people. What would you say to them? Straight up, what would you say?
Nah, I mean, that's asinine. I get it. I get it.
So the idea of loyalty, like I get what you're saying, but I gotta pull your coat on that one.
No, of course. I mean, hey man, look, that's perfectly fine and I get it. But I'm just simply saying, for me as a fan, that's all I am. I don't work. I'm so far on the periphery with basketball. It's not funny. But I'm just saying, for me as a fan, I want somebody to hate, and I don't want them to go to another team, and then I gotta love you. Nah, man, I want to hate you. I want to hate you forever. You know what I'm saying? And I you know, in the 90s, I didn't like Jordan because Jordan was, you know, killing everything. You know, Barkley was still my dude. And then Barkley goes to the Suns or whatever. And I'm like, wow, that's my man. Now what? What do I do now? You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, so.
I mean, that's the gift of the curse of free agency, though, right? The gift and the curse of being able to apply your trade wherever you want to apply your trade comes with the fact that these guys own these teams, billionaires who half the time this is a vanity project for them to own a team and say, you know, ooh, look at their strong black bodies, word to Donald Sterling. And, you know, they don't really care about the basketball. They just care about the ownership part of it. And this leads me to a great question for you now, because we talked about, you know, as a journalist, as a writer yourself, and your appreciation for people who actually do this as opposed to just getting on the internet and interviewing people or sitting in front of people. I was going to get you to name your starting five journalists or writers by position or your all-time Philadelphia 76ers squad. Now, that's a tough one because as a writer, you might be like, I don't want to give them props because I'm still, you know, I still got my pen game. My quote game is heavy.
That ain't too hard. No. Okay. I definitely give you top five. I'm going to put myself as, what would I be on a team? I think I'd be a power forward. I like that.
I was going to say that to tell you the truth.
Yeah. My man, Datwan Thomas, my homie. He's probably the point guard, if I'm being honest.
Datwan Thomas
is now currently the editor-in-chief of Vibe, but he started out at Vibe as an intern. And he came, left, went, you know, he went a lot of places. He did King Magazine. So all you thirsty young men who used to get the King covers, he used to run the show then. And Datwan also is just a good guy in general. He's very level-headed, smart. And he's somebody I respect. A mutual friend of ours made sure we became friends because she was like, you guys remind me of each other so much. Y'all have to be friends. So she kind of put us together as friends, and we've always had that love for each other. So Datwan would be number, you know, the point. I'm going to put the center as, I think, my man Jerry Barrow. Now, Jerry is a dude I've known a long time. Now, Jerry's not as, so to speak, well-known, but he's this dude that's just so such a dope writer that deserves a little, I would say, a lot more credit for his pen. But I'll put it to you like this. A mutual friend of ours, became incredibly upset that Jerry unfollowed her on social media. And she did not know why he unfollowed her, but she came to me and was like, oh my God, he stopped following me. He's my favorite writer. And he stopped, you know, what can I do? What did I do? And she had me without her knowing. I went and talked to him. He started following her again. So that just gives you some idea of how good of a writer, how great of a writer Jerry is.
And where does he write, or where did he write?
Well, Jerry's written for everybody, from King to The Source to long time at The Source. So I'll say that. And right now he works at a competitor. I won't say the name, but he works at a competitor now. He left the music game for a while to work at BET, and he was doing Hollywood stuff at BET. You know, so Jerry's pinging. Now that's three. Now this is where it gets a little difficult. Now I could go into, you know who I'm gonna say? I'm gonna say Kim Osorio. Kim Osorio.
Nice. Yeah.
That's the big homie. And she's the former editor-in-chief of The Source magazine. Mm-hmm. And she's dope. So she would be, I don't know what she would be.
Is she a killer or a small forward? Is she utility? Like, can she do a little bit of everything, or is she the killer? She's going to come out and give you 40 like Kobe or AI.
I think Kim's a killer. Yeah, definitely Kim's a killer. Yeah, Kim's a killer.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm with that. So your small forward, the person is going to be your Dr. J, your Julius Erving. Who's that going to be?
Woo, now that's tough. I gotta find somebody young. Can I find that's on the young side? Who's on the younger side? Oh my God, this part, this is where it's tough. There's a couple out there, but I'm gonna go with Rob Markman.
Okay.
He's a writer. There's a few people. By the way, I'm leaving out the 90s. I'm leaving out almost all the 90s. So your Kevin Powells and your Dream Hamptons and, you know, all of that, you know, I'm leaving all that off the table. Just be clear.
Right.
Those people are in another zone altogether. Mm. All right. So that's that. So Rob Markman is a guy who is still out here killing it. He's also an MC. And from a journalistic point of view and prominence point of view, meaning in front of the camera, he's absolutely doing the thing that is respectable with his pen, respectable for his interviews, and respectable with the bars too. So that rounds it out. But there's obviously a lot more people I could name.
No doubt. And I mean, that's with anything, right? It's tough to narrow down to your top five that are alive, you know, whether mm-hmm. you're talking about basketball, hip hop culture, or people with the pen game, you know. But
yeah,
I definitely want to respect you and thank you for your time and attention today. And yeah, let me make sure.
By the way, Drake is a bad luck charm, and he's why they're going to lose against the Sixers.
So what, tell me the issue with Drake.
The issue with Drake is when he starts showing up, people start losing. Is he
Eddie Mush from A Bronx Tale? You remember that movie, A Bronx Tale? Eddie Mush, the dude that when he bet, he made all the gamblers like lose their money.
Yeah, that's Drake.
Wow.
Yeah, okay. Shout out to Drake. Thank you, Drake. Do your thing tonight, man.
I don't know. That feels like service the air missile, you know, fired right now. Not even a shot fired. That's service the air, champ.
Sound like a real one.
But hey, look, man, I appreciate your time and consideration today. And I want people to know where they can find you. Can you let them know where they can find you? I know we can see you here on the screen, but you know, we're doing the audio first. So
yeah, find me at Chuck Creekmer, CHUCKCREEKMUR, everywhere on all social platforms, also All Hip Hop COM. Please do not be confused by imitators and people that try to use the Google search to get their little thing popping. It's just one of us, man. Just one.
No doubt. Now tell me about the Jigsaw before we go, because that was something that I want to know. Was that your MC name?
It turned into it because after I pledged Alpha Phi Alpha, that was, you know, a name given to me by the late great Phil Ward, aka Black Steel in the Hour of Chaos. And he determined that I was extremely difficult to understand, like a puzzle. And he gave me that name. And God rest his soul, he was a good brother. But that's I earned it honestly. And so I kept it.
Well, just so you know, I'm glad someone gave it to you, because where I'm from, to give yourself Nick nomenclature, is sucker sauce. We don't play them. We don't do that time-to-time foolery. No reindeer games like that over this way.
Facts. No question.
I appreciate you, man. And best of luck and continued success.
Thank you. Same to you.
It's Not Winning Time on the Open Run with Will Strickland. I want to thank my very special guest, Mr. Chuck Creekmer of allhiphop.com, doing big things. Glad we finally met after all this time, walking these same rough interweb hip-hop streets and never really crossing paths until today. Appreciate him and looking forward to seeing what he has coming up next. And with that being said, it is now time for the news, views, and truths that you choose on the NBA and beyond. Presumptive number one pick in the 2022 NBA draft, Chet Holmgren from Gonzaga University declared himself eligible for the draft, as well as half the roster of the Duke Blue Devils. I guess they don't want to play for John Shire. No more Coach K, no more Duke. Who knows? NCAA champion from Kansas University, Remy Martin, dropped his name in the hat, although he wants to maintain his eligibility in the event that he is not drafted high enough. And shout out to his teammate and to a friend of mine, my teammate, actually. Friend of the program, Gary Durant, who signed their big man from Kansas, David McCormick, to a deal with Durant Sports Management. So shouts out and best of luck to both of you guys. And the most outstanding player of March Madness this year, Ochai Agbaji, put his name in the hat as well. It's going to be a very interesting draft between Banchero, Holmgren, Agbaji, Jabari Smith down there in Auburn. Very interesting based on need and who ends up getting the number one pick in the draft. The draft is coming up in June. We'll find out. Someone who won't be around for March Madness or the next college basketball season, at least as a head coach, Villanova's Jay Wright, who announced his retirement at age 60, came into the office and said he didn't feel the same fire anymore. The two-time champion doesn't know what's next, but he's going to take some time to download, relax, enjoy life, enjoy his family, and see what's next. He's going to have myriad opportunities to come in as an analyst, as a coach somewhere else, maybe in the NBA, who knows. But for now, fare thee well to Jay Wright, two-time NCAA champion for the Villanova Wildcats. The coaching carousel in the NBA continues to spin round and round, round we go, as James Borrego, the former head coach of the Charlotte Hornets, is out. Rumors on the rumor mill, as it were, because we don't like to stand on conjecture corner, are saying that guys like Mike D'Antoni, or Antoni, depending upon with whom you speak, and Frank Vogel are some of the first names that people are mentioning. But what about some new blood? Sam Cassell, longtime assistant, three-time NBA champion. I forgot about his one he won in Boston. Been on Doc Rivers' bench everywhere he's been for the most part. He was on the bench in Boston, decided once he got out of the game to work with him in LA with the Clippers. Ends up going to Philadelphia with Doc as well. I think he's earned his shot. David Vanterpool, another coach, who I think has earned his shot as well. You know, I mean, George Karl might disagree. You've been noticing the Twitter battle between DeMarcus Amir Cousins and former NBA head coach in 2022, Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame nominee and entrant, George Karl. I don't know how he got in. I guess it's longevity. You know, they've been going back and forth about DeMarcus Cousins saying Sacramento didn't do anything but call his name on draft day. They didn't do anything for him because of the instability on the bench and in the front office. And I guess the coach, and let's do some coach speak here. George Karl comes from a place in the time where black people who spoke up for themselves, no matter how they were speaking up for themselves, were seen as uppity, not staying in their place. So George Karl responded to DeMarcus Cousins by saying, hey, they gave you a chance to earn over $50 million playing the game that you would play for free, basically, which is true in the sense that he would play the game for free anyway. But he's acting like somehow this is a donation from the Kings to a downtrodden youth in the hood, some charitable donation they were making, instead of getting one of the most versatile big men who ever played the game, despite his injuries and his attitude. A multiple-time All-Star, a couple times on an All-NBA team. He wasn't chopped liver. He wasn't some just dude they gave some money to. But George Karl has always had this issue with the anointments of black coaches. I got a white assistant who can't get a job. Maybe he should run for office with Donald Trump. Am I calling him what I'm calling him? Yeah, perhaps. But Kenny Smith might defend him. Not because he's right or he's wrong. Not because his position is antiquated and ignorant. But because he went to North Carolina. Because that's what they do. At any rate, why don't we continue with the defending thing and talk about the Defensive Player of the Year this year, Marcus Smart from the Boston Celtics. Impressive, impressive, impressive. The first time a guard has won that award since 1995-96 when Gary Payton, the glove, won it. He was there when they awarded Marcus Smart with the trophy. Marcus Smart came to the arena ready for battle in a boxer's robe. Shouts out to Puma. Going all out, putting all the stops out where they had a big lock over a building somewhere in Boston or in Massachusetts somewhere, saying that Marcus Smart was the Defensive Player of the Year, or, you know, getting them this custom robe that had DPOY in the back. Marcus Smart came prepared to battle. I mean, Bam Adebayo for the Miami Heat. Thought it was disrespectful that Marcus Smart won the award. We'll find out if they end up facing each other in the Eastern Conference Finals. Now, won't we? But first things first, let's give it up to Marcus Smart. Let's also give it up to the Rookie of the Year, Toronto's Scotty Barnes, who fought through injury to be there for his team that was down and facing elimination. They're down 3-0, now down 3-1, won Game 4 in Toronto, in Philly for Game 5 tonight. Could this be the end? Doesn't really matter. Scotty Barnes became the third Toronto Raptor to win Rookie of the Year, following in the footsteps of Damon Stoudemire and half-man, half-amazing Vincent Lamar Carter as Rookies of the Year in the National Basketball Association. In an interview before Game 4 of the Denver Nuggets-Golden State Warriors, Draymond Green was holding court with the media as they were discussing Demetrius Jamal Morant and the possibility that the Warriors and the Grizzlies could be facing off in the second round. They have to take care of their business in the first round, first things first. But that he was even on the most improved player ballot surprised Draymond. Surprised me too. It's disrespectful in a way. And you could tell in the interview he really wanted to say something else, but he wouldn't. I wanted to say it. Luka Doncic was an MVP-level candidate. He was on a ballot for most improved player, but they would have never given him that award because they found it as disrespectful. He wasn't a guy that, when he came to the league, Luka was like number one pick level. So they're never going to give him most improved player because they saw him as a savior, a new face of the league. That's not going to happen.
It's almost disrespectful in that way. Giannis is a different story for those who want to bring up, well, Giannis wasn't the most improved player. Giannis was the 15th pick in the draft, outside of the lottery. People couldn't see and project Giannis becoming this person. That's why he went so low in the draft. He was a unicorn from Europe. We've seen this in the past that failed before. Giannis built a little different. But back to this, and I could see where he was going with this, but he would not say it. I understand why. I can say it. So a top five MVP candidate for most of this season is on the most improved player list? No, you don't do that. It disrespects either award. It disrespects the player who ascended to that level. And you could see this last year. But Draymond Green has some words for that. Also, as a milestone, I want to shout out Draymond Jamal Green Sr. as the fifth player to record 200 steals in his playoff career, as well as his 10th triple-double. There are only four other people ahead of him who've done this. Irvin Magic Johnson, Larry Joe Bird, Jason Frederick Kidd, and that other guy, you know, the hashtag, he who shan't be named. Anyway, so we're talking about the playoffs. Let's go right into Denver and Golden State because down 3-0, Denver said we want to stop the scary Warriors. Jordan Poole playing incredible. They had a whole new nickname, PTSD, with I guess is Poole, Thompson, Steph, and Draymond. They worked that out a little bit. But I noticed that the All-Star by default was not in that mix. He actually played well in Game 4, the game that they lost, and Andrew Christian Wiggins. I'm not going to shit on him, but maybe he is just a more expensive Harrison Barnes. I don't know. You tell me. But being down 3-1 is not a badge of honor, Denver Nuggets. We know you came back from 2-3-1 deficits in the bubble. This ain't the bubble no more. You're playing the Golden State Warriors for Wardell, Stephen Curry, and Klay Alexander Thompson. They scored 65 points in a game and lost. That's not going to happen in Game 5 in San Francisco. Forget about it. And I'm not saying you don't have a chance, but this chance is slim that Monte Morris and the rest of those guys, the others, help out Nikola Jermaine Jokic. And it's funny how the narrative switches and the sliding scale of sympathy switches depending upon who the character is, who has help, who does not have help. The former 46th pick in the draft, presumptive two-time MVP, he doesn't have help. That's why, you lose 40% of your offense and Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr. I can understand that. But you led your team to the sixth seed in the playoffs. Allegedly, the Golden State Warriors have nothing to combat what you can do, Nikola Jokic. But this tells you more about why this is such a great team game. And if you can play a team game, the stars will rise to the top even on that team. But your others will also rise and become visible. Insert University of Michigan Go Blue all day, every day, Jordan Poole. Or a.k.a. Jordan Poole Old Money, because he's similar sauteing everything in front of him. Scored 59 points in his first two playoff games, which is only second in the franchise history behind some dude, Wilton Norman Chamberlain. You might have heard of him before. We had 63, probably in one game that sat out the second game. I don't know. I'm just talking. All these 3-1 series are about to be done. They're going to be done in 5 games. This first round is going to be done. There are a few exceptions to the rule. Very few. This is no different. Also about to be donezo are the Utah Jazz as they face off against the Dallas Mavericks in Game 5, but let's talk about Game 4, because that's what we need to do. Luka Lamar, that's what too harsh. Doncic came back, scored 30, but they took the L. So who do we blame? The two games he was out, they won. Now, there's no way in hell I'm going to sit here and say that the Dallas Mavericks are better without Luka Doncic, but did allow their others to start shining. One in particular, who of course is going to be swimming in a similar pool, old money, like Jordan Poole, is Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson was the backup. He played beside Luka a lot this year. Got a chance as the understudy to be the lead actor. People forget he was the National Player of the Year in college when he was at Jay Wright's Villanova. He can hoop. His daddy was in the league too, Rick Brunson. Shout out to Rick. But he was averaging 36 a game in the two games they won without Luka. 36 from Jalen Brunson. Career numbers, including being the first Maverick to ever score 40-plus points in a game without one turnover. Not Mark McGuire, not Rolando Blackman, not Jimmy Jackson, not Jamal Mashburn, not Jason Kidd, Steve Nash, or Dirk Nowitzki. Jalen Brunson. They also closed the chapter on the Rudy Gobert, Donovan Mitchell saga in Utah. Somebody got to go. I don't think it's going to be Spider, to tell you the truth. I think it's going to be Rudy, who gets exposed in the playoffs the past two seasons. We saw how the Clippers exposed and rendered him basically useless in the playoffs last year. Terrence Mann earned a new contract, taking Rudy off the bounce of the basket because he couldn't guard him on the perimeter. And the Dallas Mavericks have done the same thing. They spread 5 wide and go to the saucepan and let come what may. If you sink the defense and you have open shooters on the wings, let it fly. Dunzo for Utah. Maybe even Quinn Snyder goes too. New Voices in Utah, or as Ari Spears likes to call it, from what I've heard recently, White Man's Africa. I did not know that. I did not know that Utah was called that. You learn something new every day. On to Minnesota versus Memphis, and Chris Finch and not calling timeouts with huge runs. As a rookie coach, I understand that you want to show confidence in your young squad, but they are not a veteran-laden team who understands that they have to sustain runs. You're not Phil Jackson with Shaq and Kobe, or with Scottie and Michael Jordan. You got Karl-Anthony Towns, notoriously flimsy heart, Karl-Anthony Towns, and a bulldog at Patrick Beverley, who's made the playoffs every year since he's been in the league, and the precocious youngster, Anthony Edwards. You got to call a timeout. You got to stop the bleeding, or they lose their confidence. That didn't happen. And when he didn't call those timeouts, when they went on this run and the biggest comeback in, I think, Memphis Grizzlies history, especially in their playoff history, I thought about Bill Russell when he was the coach of the Sacramento Kings. And I was in school at Rice University, the Harvard of the South. Go Owls. Hootie hoo all day, a day. And I ran into Mr. Russell in the airport there, and I said, Mr. Russell, you got to get your autograph. Big fan, whatever. He didn't sign autographs. I didn't know that at the time. So I got mad at him. I said, I guess you don't call timeouts either. He got fired that year. I found out why. He's more likely to sit down and talk to you about anything but basketball instead of giving you an autograph. It feels like that is cultural currency that you don't have to try on eBay. I respect that. Chris Finch, you don't have that luxury. The second time in 17 years you've been in the playoffs, you got to make better decisions. With a young team, going back to play in Memphis in Game 5, tied up 2-2 with the Memphis Grizzlies, the number 2 seed in the conference. You have a chance. Whoever wins Game 5 wins this series. Will it be the Memphis Grizzlies? People are getting on Ja Morant, even though I gave him praises and Draymond was giving him praises. It is fact. And people, I don't know who spends the time to do this kind of stuff, but he's actually put out more tweets during the playoffs than he's scored field goals in this series of 4 games so far, which is crazy. I think he's going to have a good Game 5. He's going to help them win the game. They almost won Game 4 in Minnesota. They almost don't count, except in horseshoes and hand grenades and commercials, maybe. Because I almost believed what I saw in this commercial, the State Farm commercial that I guess is spreading from Chris Paul, and now other people are getting these NBA endorsements with State Farm, whether it's Trae Young or Karl-Anthony Towns, who's in a commercial playing against an NBA 2K gamer, one of those fantasy basketball people. And Karl-Anthony Towns is beating him, man. You don't know how good these guys are. I believe he could get beat by a 2K guy. I mean, I'd be lying to myself. But still, his heart doesn't tell me that he's really that guy. It's going to be Anthony Edwards if they ever make any real moves. It's going to be Anthony Edwards to lead them. Because I know full well some guy off the street cannot beat Karl-Anthony Towns. Guys off the street can't even beat Brian Scalabrine, the Boston Celtics color commentator. And he's been on the league for years. And some high school kid was talking crazy to him. I mean, there are a bunch of videos on the internet, those rough interweb streets, where the fantasy owners can talk about what they can do. The worst guy in the NBA could cook you. The worst guy. I don't care who it is out there listening. The worst guy in the NBA could cook you right now. But as I said, and I will continue to say ad nauseum, that the key to anything that Memphis wants to do beyond the first round of the playoffs, even the second round of the playoffs, will be dependent upon what Jaren Jackson Jr. can do. And that means staying on the court, out of foul trouble, and being productive. He's a foul magnet. But he cannot be an assistant coach on the bench if Memphis plans to do anything beyond fighting to the death with the Minnesota Timberwolves. Guess what? Injuries, which have played a role in each and every championship in NBA history, are making themselves a factor in the New Orleans Pelicans-Phoenix Suns matchup. With no Devin Booker, the series is now tied at 2-2, going back to Phoenix. I want to say who wins Game 5, but I feel like Phoenix is going to end up winning Game 5. But you've imbued Willie Green's team with a sense of confidence. Brandon Ingram playing like what many people thought Kevin Durant would be playing like, what Jason Tatum is playing like. He's playing like that right now for the Pelicans. With the steadying hand of Christian James McCollum in the backcourt, the fire of Jose Alvarado coming off the bench being a total irritant, Jonas Kristaps-Valanciunas playing big against DeAndre Ayton, and Herbert Jones. The man was the Southeastern Conference Player of the Year and also the Defensive Player of the Year. Aaliyah Boston did that on the women's side, but Herbert Jones was a second-round pick in the NBA. How? Shouts out to Trajan Langdon and David Griffin for finding this guy. They believe. That's a scary proposition. When you have all these coaches bitching and moaning, Taylor Jenkins, we talked about Taylor Jenkins and not knowing any other white people with the last name Jenkins, complaining about the referees in his game, but they lost. Monty Williams, coach of the year in the NBA, complained about the referees, this foul disparity, this free throw shooting disparity. But the Phoenix Suns don't have anyone really who can create off the dribble for themselves except Chris Paul when Devin Booker's not in the lineup. The Pelicans do. Brandon Ingram, CJ McCollum. They have guys who can break down the defense, get to the saucepan. We'll see. Game 5, crucial game for both teams. No CP3 is the quarter 4 murderer this time. The quiet star of Brandon Ingram is making us think less and less about Big Gumbo, Zion Williamson. Everybody said, oh man, Zion's in shape. He can put it. No, don't mess up the chemistry. New Orleans Pelicans, and they really do believe. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on Milwaukee and Chicago. It's basically done. Chicago, the regular season is reflecting itself in the playoffs right now. Milwaukee came in, smacked them in the mouth in 2 games, taking a 3-1 lead. Giannis is doing what he's doing. Doesn't matter whether Chris Middleton's in the lineup or not, I guess. You know, a valiant Chicago team, a game Chicago team with no depth off the bench. If it's beyond Zach LaVine, DeMar Darnell DeRozan, Vucci man Nikola Vucevic, they lack. And I love Alex Caruso. I like Kobe White. I like Javante Green, but they're not guys that are going to change the course of a series against the reigning and defending NBA champions. Shout out to young Ted Cruz, a.k.a. Grayson Allen. This is your life. I said this in the podcast before with Chris Middleton being down. The career high 27 in game 4 against Chicago. They put them out of their misery in Milwaukee at the fire serve tomorrow night. In Miami and Atlanta, no Kyle Lowry, strained hammy, no problem. Jimmy Butler made sure of that, and they manhandled the Atlanta Hawks in the house that Jacques-Dominique Wilkins built, State Farm Arena. Trey didn't save the day this game. They're not going to get a save going down the South Beach. Their talents won't be taken there at all. Jammed on Game 5, Atlanta and Miami. And before we get out of here, talk about jammed on. Is this really on brand with the logo? Jerome Allen West, a.k.a. Jerry West, who is suing HBO and Adam McKay, the producer and director of the HBO show Winning Time, about the beginning of the Showtime dynasty with the Lakers, because he feels like he's being unfairly and cruelly depicted as a drunk, rage-fueled hellion in this show. But isn't it kind of on brand for him to do this? If that's what he's doing? I don't know. It's easy to make that assertion. But, you know, everybody today, when you can control your narrative and control your algorithms on these rough interweb streets, they're making their own documentaries, telling their own story. Could Jerry West have told his own story? Absolutely. Does he want to? I don't know. But he's definitely going to file a grievance, not like a Ben Simmons, give me $20 million for not doing anything. Jerry West built a great franchise, even though he didn't want Magic Johnson. He wanted to draft Sidney Moncrief. The best mistake Jerry West ever made was Magic Johnson. You have to watch the film. I watched the first episode. For what it's worth, it's entertainment. There's some truth in the story, for sure. I mean, obviously, they say there's some things that have been dramatized for the purpose of dramatic interpretation. That's fine. I mean, even the depiction of Magic Johnson might have people going, that's how Magic really was? I don't know. Magic gonna let you know. I mean, Michael Jordan had one last dance. What is it called? The Last Dance? Wasn't that? That was. I can't remember. I wasn't all that enthused. But Magic Johnson has his own 4-part docu-series about his life and times in L.A. He's controlling his narrative. Will anyone see it? Well, it's not going to be on ESPN. Magic maybe made a lot of money. I don't know if anybody's going to rush to see it like they rushed to see what Michael Jordan's story was about. Because Magic's always been here. Jordan, not so much. Didn't utilize social media like that. Didn't like rap music. If you didn't know that, you should check it out. He's been name-checked more than any basketball player in the history of rap. But doesn't like rap. Know how that's going to fly on these rough interweb streets. But what should fly is the podcast where basketball and life are one. So come back for more next week. And do remember, do what's popular with the population. Make sure you don't get beat off the dribble. And keep listening to The Open Run with Will Strickland. Rich kid, my mellow, my man, do what you do, what you do with. Easy.